I'm here to join you to make a little news. My name is Pete Buttigieg. They call me Mayor Pete. I'm a proud son of South Bend, Indiana, and I am running for President of the United States.
Welcome everybody back to the Good Guy Pete podcast. I'm super excited to be with you here again tonight. This is Michael. We have Ryan and Letty here, as hey. Always. And this is actually, we're going back to back tonight.
Boom.
Boom.
So we made you guys wait a month, so we're like, we got to get this.
We got to get the show on the road. And we do apologize for the delay. And there were hundreds of emails being like, hey, when are you going to come out with the next episode? And I want to say, we hear you. We see you. And we don't see you. But on a serious note, we do appreciate the feedback we've gotten and the questions that we've gotten. And we're going to try to get to all those and all the topics and try to answer all those things.
Yep.
So honestly, guys, thanks for being a fun audience and interacting with us and journeying this with us. I mean, we're doing this as a family, if I can say that.
Aw.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all
like that.
If I can go High School Musical, we're all in this together. You know what I'm saying?
High School Musical.
I'm going to be honest.
How old are you?
Haven't seen it.
What are you guys talking about right now? You haven't seen High School Musical.
Well, I haven't.
I'm 32.
Yeah.
Have you not seen High?
I'm too old for that, man.
Okay. Well.
I'm older than you, Michael.
Moving on. So if there is a big event that happens between now and the time that this gets released, we'll touch on it on a future episode or we'll come back and we'll edit in a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know which we'll do. We'll probably touch it on a future episode is probably what it will be. But for today, I'm excited because the topic is going to be progress versus perfection.
Okay.
Yep.
So what does that mean?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the question, has Pete really been a good mayor, right? Because you see this out there as people in South Bend, this is probably the thing we get most offended by when people are like, well, South Bend's still, you know, a horrible city. And if Pete can't even fix his own city, why should we trust him to try and be president and fix our country? And frankly, it's just a little offensive to feel like everybody on the outside is telling you your city sucks when it doesn't really feel like that ourselves. So the question I think in this progress versus perfection is Pete really a good mayor if everything's not perfect? Because the reality is this, crime is still high in South Bend. Poverty is still high. Racial inequality is still high, and he hasn't solved homelessness.
How dare he?
So our city is not fixed yet. We're not 100%. We haven't reached 100% perfection. So if Pete's city isn't great, how can we trust him to lead our country? I think that's the question.
I think it's a fair question too, right? Like you have these issues here, and if there's a guy here that's neglecting all of them and doesn't care about any of them and hasn't done anything for them, I think it's a fair critique of this guy has no place or no business running for president. And I think what you're going to hear us come in today and say is none of that is true. Maybe some of it is true. there's some of that that has some more, right?
Yeah.
But I would say the overall narrative of that is that is not the story of South Bend.
Right. I mean, and if we're talking about progress versus perfection. You know, we've discussed this before. There's no perfect candidate. There's no pure candidate. You have a city of 101,000, right? 101,000.
Yeah.
We're not going to have 101,000 people who are satisfied. I mean, that's just, you look at our national elections, you know, about half the country is not going to be happy with their choice. And maybe what comes from that. And so to say, well, he hasn't solved all of these things is unfair. I mean, I think you can make valid criticisms as to some things that have gone on. But, I mean, are we holding all of our candidates accountable to that as well? Look at our current administration. National administration, I should pinpoint.
So let me help frame this a little bit. This was an episode I was excited about doing just for therapy, I guess, if nothing else, right? So here's my feelings of when people say that Pete hasn't done anything for South Bend, that he's not a good mayor, and if he can't be a good mayor, then how can he be a good president? It's this. Again, we keep referring back to the Newsweek, South Bend as a top five dying city, right? In my opinion, you could say South Bend as a dying city was a 10 out of a scale of 100, right? So on a scale of 100, it was at a 10. Well, I feel like now Pete has gotten us to a solid 60 or so, right? So made us progress of 50 along the scale, right? But if we're a 60 out of 100 now, that's quite the accomplishment to go from a 10 to go to a 60 with a 50 improvement in 7 years. But the reality is there's still 40 out of 100 to go, right? And so people will sit and point and say, hey, you got this 40% that's still not fixed yet. And so clearly your town is a mess. But also in addition to that 40 is some of the most complex social problems of our time. We're talking about racial injustice. We're talking about poverty. We're talking about violence in the streets and among those who are dealing with poverty, right? So if you look at the big picture to me, we can focus on, you know, is the cup half empty or half full? But it's not even half at this point. You can focus on saying, hey, there's 40 left undone. Or you could say, hey, here's a mayor that's taken his city from a 10 to a 60. Like, what other kind of leaders have produced the kind of improvement of this in the midst of a difficult situation? And so for me, like, that feels different than, you know, we saw some in the debates where you have a mayor that's taking a city that's already a 75, let's say, up to a 77, and then bragging about how great of a mayor that makes them for that 2-point of improvement in a city that's already got a lot of things going for it. So for me, any day, if I had to choose, give me the leader, give me the mayor that's made the most progress in the unlikeliest or most challenging scenarios, because I will take the one that's made the progress more, even if there's still a lot left to be undone, than somebody who just makes a little bit of progress, but things paint a rosier picture.
But they were already, you know, the A student.
Right.
I echo all that. And it's just kind of, I would say, disheartening and sad to hear the criticism, the critique of that 40% with the 60% being untalked about.
Right.
I don't want to say unjust. Can I say unjust?
Sure.
It's an unjust thing to... And then, like you said, have the other candidates or the other people talk about that 2% increase or whatever it is you want to talk about. And then see Pete under the microscope of, hey, look where your city currently is. Well, that's not a fair narrative that you're talking about. It's apples and oranges. We're not talking about the exact same thing.
And then he talks about this, right? About this executive experience that he has. And that's what people are criticizing is this they're saying he doesn't have experience, but that's what we're criticizing is all these things he has or hasn't done. And we're not seeing that criticism, I don't think, as much under that microscope as he's getting it. And part of it, I think, is because of a lot of things that we currently have going on in the community and because of his candidacy that's getting projected out there in ways that, you know, we like or don't like. But he's not, you know, to your point, Ryan, he's made a lot of progress. And we're talking about 7.5 years. Mm. And we've talked in just about all the other episodes of how many years it took to get us to that dying city point. Right. We weren't always a dying city. It was a generation.
Yeah.
And we're in a positive direction right now. And so the goal is to get, right, to keep getting that number higher and higher. But no, he hasn't solved homelessness. He hasn't solved racism. He hasn't solved everything that has to do with poverty. And nobody has. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Yep.
And the critique of that response I see is a lot of people feel like that's a cop-out to say, well, no one solved this. But what they don't realize is it's not from a lack of trying or from a lack of policy or from a lack of caring. I think it's a cop-out answer when you say that, but there hasn't been the backing and the progress made when it comes to policy and when it comes to government intervention at the city level.
Yep.
So in this specific instance, this is not a cop-out.
Right. And nobody's minimizing again, this is all just a hypothetical thing. I'm just making up numbers. But nobody's minimizing that 40 left undone. Nobody is minimizing saying, like, we as a city, we need to make progress for our homeless neighbors. And we are working on that. That's actually a project that like is one of the passions in my heart. We need to make progress for them. We need to make progress on racial injustice in our city. We need to make progress on violence in our city. We need to make progress on poverty in our city. These are very important things. So this is not to say, oh, these things aren't important because he's done some other things. Not to say that at all. But consider the difficulty of these things, even for the job of a mayor, right? The mayor has no control. In Indiana, the mayor has no control over minimum wage for the city, right? Which would go a long way to helping people who are dealing with the effects of poverty, right? Because in Indiana, the state house restricts cities from making their own minimum wage standards, right? So that's an act that would help those in poverty that he cannot do. In Indiana, the mayor of a city has nothing to say about the schooling or school board or funding for schools, which our school funding and our education in South Bend contributes to the experience.
They're in that 40%.
Yeah, and yeah. It contributes to the experience of the families and children, especially those disproportionately affected by poverty. The mayor in Indiana doesn't affect healthcare. The mayors can't do much about like reparations or things that are needed to work back against the racial injustices that have been taking place in our country, right? So there's a lot of this 40% that's undone. There's a lot that needs done about it, but there is a lot in which his hands are tied from being able to do, which if he was in the role of president, he would have a lot more capacity to make the differences in some of these areas that are left unresolved in South Bend. On another point though, Letty, is coming back to something you kind of touched on a little bit earlier was, you know, Pete's getting this credit, this criticism saying, if you haven't fixed your city, you need to go back to your city and fix your city before you do something else. But you were making the point that do we hold, you know, the congressional representatives and senators that same standard, right?
We don't. I mean, and how many politicians, how many senators, congressmen do we have that have been in those positions for years? People who are sitting right now, and we have this crisis on the border. Are they getting, yeah, this, you know, right, why are you running for reelection if you haven't fixed this? I mean, and I'm comparing some very, very different things, of course, but we're not getting that same credit. Nobody has created a perfect anything wherever they're at. Mm. And even when somebody becomes president, it's 8 years to try to win the era, right? To put us in that progression. And I can't think of, and we have a lot of wonderful past presidents who've done a lot of positive things, but they didn't fix everything. If they did, we wouldn't be where we're at right now.
Yeah, so I think the point is, if we're going to hold Pete accountable for the perfection left unreached, then we have to apply those same standards to the Congress and senators that are also running for office and say, like, why haven't we fixed immigration yet? Why haven't we fixed poverty yet? Why haven't we fixed healthcare yet? And all of these things of saying, like, hey, like those are unfinished business as well, right? So if you're going to hold Mayor Pete to that, then we need to at least apply that equally.
I mean, and part of it is because Pete is a mayor of a, not a super small town, but, you know, it's a decent sized town. His decisions and things that he's been involved with, I think, are maybe easier for people to grasp at.
Absolutely.
As opposed to where you're just a vote, maybe in another position that you hold. I think maybe that's part of where people feel they can target or criticize him more. But still, I mean, this is to his point as far as his experience goes. Nobody criticizes Pete more than the people in South Bend, for better or for worse. Nobody, you know what I mean? Whether he's at the grocery store, whether they like him or not, they're, you know, whether it's the pothole or the city light or the darn roundabouts, nobody can criticize him more than a South Bend resident.
Laura Ingram gives us a run for our money, but
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't pay attention much to Laura for many reasons. But this is the experience, right? The person who is on the ground, who is working directly with people and leaders in the community on a day-to-day basis.
I got to say, Michael, first High School Musical and then Laura Ingraham. I'm really got to question your media
guys,
choices.
I am so sorry. It's just where I am in the night. It's late. This is our second show in a row. My mind's wandering. It's just, no, but I echo everything you're saying, Letty. Ryan, I completely agree. It's almost like, I would say Pete's under a microscope that other people just don't have the ability to be under because of his position in mayor.
Yeah, the mayor being the senior executive, the buck stops there, right? Where if the people who are being held outside the country and refused to even apply for asylum status, like it's hard to figure out where the cause of that problem is or who the decision makers are to be able to hold accountable, right? Because it's spread over, 100 senators and 400 some congressional representatives and the presidential administration, right? So it's easier to say like, all right, this is the person I'm going to blame, where in these other situations, there's work left undone. It's just harder to know who to hold accountable.
He has nowhere to hide.
Right.
No. And he's, I think the beautiful thing about him is he's not trying to.
Yep.
Right. He's not. I mean, and there are, I mean, we're a community and there's plenty of criticism and I would even say blame to go around. We have, even like to go back to the schools, there's a school board, right? Like we have a city council, we have neighborhood organizations. I mean, everybody in the community has to play their part. We can't rely on one person to fix everything. Now, granted, as a mayor, that his role is to try to, you know, help tie and connect everything and make sure that, you know, we can come together to make whatever progress we need to do in our community. But our city is not one person. And I think Pete understands that. And so where I see that playing out on the next level is that this isn't somebody who's going to come in and say, I'm going to just do A, B, C, and D, and that's a decision I'm going to make on my own. It's our country needs to come together, and we need to figure out where our values are in order to truly make progress in our smaller communities out to our larger community.
It's a freaking good word.
Yeah, I feel like this episode has been like a little bit of us defending, coming to the defense, both of Mayor P, but also of our city. And that's just kind of the angst I feel right now. And I just need everybody to know that you can come after us for our lack of perfection, but you can't take away the pride and the progress that we've made. And that's what I feel is the story of South Bend right now, is that we're a people that we realize we still have a ways to go, but we are super proud of the progress we've made. And we're really thankful for Mayor Pete and the leadership that he's had in bringing us that far.
Well, that brings us to the current events for this episode. And this is awesome. I get to talk about fundraising. And
how long have you dreamed about talking about presidential fundraising?
Well, man, in my current jobs, I had to do fundraising all the time. And so I would always race people to be the biggest fundraiser. This is actually a true story.
Really?
And so this little piece here is awesome to me. The second quarter fundraising just came out, right? Yep. Second quarter?
Yep. Nice.
Yep.
And guess who is on top of everybody?
Unbelievable.
Top of the world.
I still can't believe it. Yeah. I literally, like when he announced... By the way, Liz, I know you're listening to this. We go way back, way, way back. I'm incredible strategy being the first out the gate to announce the quarter earnings. 100% intentional. You knew that you were sitting on a land like this is just gold. It's amazing.
Yep. As somebody, I forget the journalist who tweeted it as the mayor of the fourth largest city in Indiana just outraised the former vice president of the United States.
Let's go.
What does that mean?
So let's walk through the current list here. So Buttigieg is at 24.8 million with 294,000 donors. So I think, I don't have this number right in front of me. I think that amounted to about $48 per donor,
I think.
47, yeah. Something like that. I'm not good at math. I'm taking a guess. second under that was Biden with 21 million, Warren 19 million, Sanders 18 million, and Harris with 12 million.
The interesting thing, Harris and Mayor Pete both had, if you take the ratios of doubling Harris's 12 million to get to Pete's 24.8 million and doubling her 150,000 to Pete's 294,000 donors. They both had about the same ratio of donors, average donation you'd get from that.
And Sanders by far had the most donations.
Individual
donors. I see a lot of, so a couple things with this that I want to touch on. One, super impressive that Pete is number one. I would have been impressed if he was number two.
Right.
But he outraised everybody in the field. And so that means several things. One, he's going to be around for a while, and we're going to touch on that in a second. The second thing I want to mention, though, is I see him getting flack for a lot of him going to private dinners and having private campaign donation parties. But the reality is there's a cap limit to how much you can donate in general.
Yeah. This is something I had no clue how this worked before. So I assume that there was just billionaires that were, you know, and you hear these names like, and I still don't even fully understand most of this stuff, but you hear like the Koch brothers and Soros and all these names thrown around, and you're like, wait, even if you're a billionaire, you can only donate $2,800 like over the course of the campaign. Is that right?
I think it's just primaries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Over the course of the primaries. Yeah. So, I mean, that really limits things, right? And at that point, yeah, people who can donate $2,800 are different than me and you guys.
Right.
Wait, you haven't maxed out that yet? This is awkward.
we're not even going to go there. So it is different, but it's still different than maybe the completely sorted just billions of dollars coming in world that I expected that it was going to be, right?
When that number came out, I was just floored. For one, as you said, Michael, first one out the door to drop that number. They have until the middle of the month, right, to report their numbers. And he did it at, I don't know, what was like 5:30 in the morning or something ridiculous. So not only does he drop this number, which even if somebody else had raised more, this is a significant and major amount for him based on how many people actually know who he is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it put him in the news cycle again.
It put him in the news cycle again. But it also puts set pressure, I think, on the other candidates to release their numbers sooner, because if you put out 24.8 on Monday and somebody's waiting around until the middle of the month to put out a million, we'll just say somebody who's not on our list right in front of us, no one's paying attention to that, I don't think, at least not as much as this. But this is huge, regardless of if somebody would have raised more than him. For somebody who still is not known in many parts of our country.
He there's no way he could compete with even like Sanders on the amount of donors, because I don't think that many people know about him at this point yet, which is just very strange when, again, you have this very little known guy, mayor of the fourth largest city in Indiana, versus people who have been household names for the most part for decades.
By the way, if anybody is out there wants to make me a t-shirt that says mayor of the fourth largest city in Indiana, I would not object to that.
Yeah, we will take all the free things, actually.
I actually do have some pins for you guys that a fan sent. Yeah. They're not in yet. They're on their way, but they're little Pete pins.
Yes. That is awesome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And we don't work for the campaign, so therefore we can accept.
Yeah, we can accept all donations of all kinds.
Right, right. We like food, too.
So that leads us to this next interesting tidbit that piggybacks right on the current fundraising numbers, is how many asks people have actually made through their campaign emails. And this is fascinating to me.
Yeah. How many asks for money have come directly through fundraising emails from the campaigns themselves?
So I'm just going to run down this number. We have Biden with 47 asks via email. We have Warren with 42, Sanders 26, Harris 37, and Pete with four. Now, I want to be very clear here, and there's a difference between how many emails actually come out from his campaign. That's a different number. This four represents how many direct asks for money has come from his campaign, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
So he had he actually has like the third least amount of total overall emails from his campaign. So he's like the third least spammer overall. But in asks for fundraising in these emails, he's the lowest with four, like the lowest of anybody.
Why does this matter to you guys?
I mean, I think part of it goes back to his whole values thing, and he wants people to get to know him first. And I mean, even going through social media, when people would get an email, it's funny to see all the posts and the shares, because they would get an email and say, like, he's not asking me for money. He's bringing awareness to this other issue that's going on. And I think it just ties him more into individuals, and they're getting to know him, who he is, as opposed to just people, you know, him asking for people to throw money at him. And he is doing all these different fundraisers, and he is getting all this visibility, or, you know, trying to get out and get all this visibility, because he wants people to get to know him and then kind of make that decision for themselves, I think. I mean, I don't know. I haven't asked him personally, but that's sort of my analytical intake there.
He didn't stop
in
the middle of his guitar routine last night?
I actually wasn't there.
Oh.
A lot of people thought I was here. No, that video was sent to me, and I just wanted to be the first one to put it out. Thank you, Chasten, for the comment, because it's blowing up on Twitter right now.
Well, Ryan, what do you think about that number?
Yeah, I agree with Letty that I think it says that there's more important things to him, and then also just respecting people as human beings to not just be begging for money all the time, right? That he wants to be in conversation with people. And if money comes, I mean, clearly he's doing a great job fundraising. But I just appreciate, as somebody who's on his email list, not getting like emails all the time spamming me, asking me for money that I don't have.
So. I would say for me, it kind of speaks to I don't know of another way to say this, the Buttigieg family that I've seen on Twitter, on social media, the people that back him. It's more of a, I don't know, it's a close-knit group of people that believe in him and believe in his message, and they want to support that. And so it doesn't take someone prying for donations. It doesn't take someone forcefully asking all the time. What I see is a group of people collectively that say, we believe in this. We believe in this process. We believe in who he is. We're willingly giving to this, and we don't need to be asked to do so.
Right.
So what does all this fundraising money mean? What, like, okay, so he got 24.8, was that it?
Yeah.
Yep.
$24.8 million. What does that mean? Why is that even a big deal?
I mean, I think, one, it puts him in the game for the long haul. He's already met the criteria, I believe, first off, for all the debates. Yeah. And
for all of them?
Well, definitely the next one, at least the next round. But again, it puts him in there for the long haul, so he can hire more staff, which is going to be crucial in some of these key primary states, so that we've got more people. I say we as if, you know, I'm part of all of this, right?
We are.
We're unofficial. It means he can put more people on the ground in those states in order to open up that visibility and have more events.
Which is huge, because his biggest problem right now, we agree, is people don't know about him, right? So for somebody who hasn't been on TV in congressional hearings and whatnot for the last 20 years, right, people need to know. And so being able to hire staff makes that possible for him to actually get the word out, right?
Right.
So his staff is doing work. They're also raising awareness, which is really necessary.
And I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but when he first made his announcement, he only had like 3 or 4 people on the campaign. And then what, he hit 7 million in that first quarter. His progress and his ability to be out there and raise money, and his events, by the way, are selling out. Okay. So these events are selling out. He's rushing, I think, to keep up with the other campaigns, as far as getting staff in there and doing that. And so I think they said they want to hire 300 more by Labor Day.
Wow. That's crazy.
Which is a lot, but I mean, you've got 2 debates coming up, and you know, we right, here I go again, need people on the ground in order to help continue to spread who he is and his message and get that name out there.
Yeah, so I think the other thing that it does is it brings credibility. Right, that there was still people out there waiting to see if this kind of no-name underdog could really last and could really catch on. And so any question that maybe he was a flavor of the month or anything like that, I think goes out the window, with this. So when you out fundraise the former vice president of the United States, it tends to say something about a level of credibility of your message and who you are. And so I think the other thing is there's probably people who are waiting on giving endorsements. So you don't want to give an endorsement to somebody who's not going to be able to
stick around,
right? So just being able to provide that credibility means that people might be more likely to jump on with endorsements and just kind of, again, it's just building that stable base that will allow him to be able to make the thing. I was just talking with Michael about this before we started recording, of saying like, this means Mayor Pete should be in the picture probably at least until Super Tuesday. Like, he's not going to be one of these that drops out. Maybe if things don't go well in Iowa, maybe he drops out before then, of Iowa or South Carolina. But it likely means that he's going to be in it for a while.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
So that brings us to the last thing here of grassroots. And Letty, I'll let you kind of run with that.
Sure. So I am, I mean, Pete does have, and I've heard this criticism out there in social media land, right, that doesn't represent real life, that there's no real grassroots movement going on, and that's just not true. I work within the Twitter grassroots campaign team. Not campaign, we're not official, of course. We're all volunteers as far as this goes. Really just trying to help organize other supporters of Pete in order to be able to spread his message, spread what his campaign is about, positivity, of course, fight bad information with good information, trying to follow the rules of the road, which can be pretty difficult sometimes.
Those are the value statements that he asked everybody to sign
on to. Right, exactly. And let me also put out there, there's like two different grassroots things going on. There's sort of like an organized grassroots thing that's going on as well, where there's a lot of communication and on what we want to focus on in order to spread, you know, who Pete is and his message and everything going on with his campaign. And then there's sort of just the supporters, right, who are really trying to support Pete in the best way they know they can, but they also reach out to sort of the more official grassroots people, like how can we best help, especially, you know, this last month where things have kind of been up and down for individuals, and they're sort of like, what do we do? So I know myself and others have been really trying to focus the conversation moving forward and how do we best support the campaign, but how do we remain respectful of what's going on with South Bend in the community, and where are those two things separate and where do they align? And also understanding that Pete's campaign is still catching up with staffing. And so we definitely want to see the grassroots move forward in a bigger way. And I think we're definitely going to see that as they staff up. And now that we know we're in it for the long haul, but I also have a few suggestions for people who are grassroots, who don't have the money to give, on how you can support the campaign.
And when you say grassroots, you're just talking like normal people.
Normal people.
If you're a normal person who wants to be helpful, you're hearing the message, you're resonating with the message, you think that it's something that would be good.
Exactly.
Am I a normal person?
Well, that's, I think, a different episode and a totally different podcast.
Has very broad ranges.
You know, not everybody can make it to the dollar events. Not everybody can make it to every single speech that he's at. Right. He's not coming to every single community. And so there are different ways that we can support, whether that's your social media presence. We've already talked about how he's not, people are not as familiar with him in certain areas. So, you know, getting a Pete for America shirt and then running errands around, and that has really sparked a lot of conversations for people. Buying a copy of his book and donating it to your local library. There are libraries that have wait lists for his book right now.
Really?
Like 37, 38 deep. Following Pete and Chasten on Twitter, retweeting them, following a lot of the Fort Pete accounts. They're really putting out a lot of information, mostly positive. I try to keep my content wholesome. Mostly because I love my city and I love my mayor, and so I try to fall in line with that. You know, putting, just having a watch party for the next debate, you know, inviting other people. We have a lot of Facebook groups right now that are targeted towards like seniors for Pete, right? Millennials for Pete. And they're trying to organize within themselves as well on different ways that they can promote using their own voice. So there are a lot of different ways people can get involved without necessarily having to throw money at the campaign. And part of that is really just spreading the message. And whether that's your social media, whether it's wearing your shirt out, you know, just sparking up a conversation, even just shooting somebody your favorite podcast episode or your favorite interview and just say, hey, have you checked this guy out? I think is a good way to kind of get people involved and spread that Pete message.
Well, thank you so much, guys, for listening to this week's episode. As always, if you can do us a big favor, rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you listen to your show. And I think more than anything, what's going to help is just spread this message of who Pete is by sharing this podcast with people and getting other people to listen and join in on this journey. We thank you. We appreciate you guys, and we look forward to joining in next time.
Hey, friends. Do you love podcasts like the one you just listened to? Have you ever dreamed about having your own? Well, my name is Michael, and I work for Truthwork Media. We believe that everyone has a story, and every story deserves a podcast. Let us help you get started. Look us up at www.truthworkmedia.com, fill out our questionnaire, and I'll schedule a time to talk. It's really that easy. Truthwork Media. Everyone has a story. Yours needs a podcast.